I'm so excited to welcome Amanda Brinkman, Chief Brand Officer of Deluxe Corporation, host and creator of Small Business Revolution. Amanda, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Exciting to be here.
I'm really just fascinated to hear the story of your particular foray into branded communications. You know, one of the things that I think that we touched on when we chatted before was this concept of brands being able to think of themselves as publishers. So I feel like I've heard that said a lot. I feel like people talk about that. But most of them don't go on to create a sort of hit series on Hulu into their sixth season. So can you talk a little bit about your approach to sort of becoming more of a content creator and a publisher, as opposed to sort of more of a brand that thinks of, you know, advertising and amplifying only?
Absolutely. So great question. So for us, what we do through the Small Business Revolution was a very specific response to a brand problem, to a perception and awareness level issue. And so it isn't as if I think every brand needs to create a long form episodic piece of content, but I do think as marketers, we're always trying to kind of evaluate, like, what other content should we either be a part of? Should we be sponsoring? Should we be placing our ads within? And my take is, like, why not just create your own thing? And if you can do something that's authentic and genuine, you can actually reach your customers in a more intimate way than just being a part of or piggybacking on someone else's content. But it does take a lot of thought to figure out what that's going to be that will resonate with your customers and will have them kind of organically flocking to your content. So for us at Deluxe, we're a 105-year-old company. So six years ago, when we were about to celebrate our centennial, we had a big brand awareness problem. We were only known for our past or a legacy, which was our origination as a check printer. But we had started to evolve alongside our customers. We were offering all these small business marketing services, but we had less than 1% brand awareness with small businesses. And we didn't have a very big budget. And we were being outspent about 14-1 by all of our competitors who have very recognizable brands like GoDaddy and Constant Contact. So for us, the answer had to be something that could help us increase our share of voice beyond just advertising. At the budget level we were looking at, we would have had less than 2% share of voice, and our message just wouldn't have gotten out. So for me, it was like, how do we create something that people actually want to spend time with? How do we bet on content in a way that kind of flips that traditional model where you think of working dollars versus non-working dollars? If we were to invest some of those working dollars, paid media budget, in really, really rich content, could we actually end up then reaching more customers than we could afford to if we were just paying for those impressions? And so that sounds like a great strategy, but you have to have a good idea to deliver against that. And for us, again, we wanted to reach small businesses. And so the idea for the Small Business Revolution was that we could honor the small business community, tell their stories, create a movement to inspire more people to support small businesses, and our brand could come along for the ride. And I could talk much more about what the program is and how we do it, but at the simplest of terms, that's what it was. We needed to reach small businesses. Really rich content was the only way we were going to be able to actually stretch our spend to make enough of an impact to move our brand awareness and to actually start to grow our business.
Well, and I'd love to talk a little bit about, you know, so you started originating with what the problem was, which is I think super helpful for context. You didn't necessarily bust into the boardroom and be like, I've got it, you know, I want to create this award-winning series. It was, you know, there was a pathway to it. I think you started with initially 100 small business stories and some others, but can you talk a little bit about, like, what was the journey to get to the series? Because now we're sort of looking at the series as if that's where you started. How did you sell it through? Like, what were some of the early steps that you took?
The early steps I took was really in my actual first interviews with the CEO. I was like, you know, the only way we're going to do something around this kind of brand awareness, the only thing we're going to break through is by doing something really, really bold and something that's amplified. And, you know, I kind of, like, on the way in was like, hire me if you
already.
Yeah. I didn't necessarily have the full idea. It was actually through, you know, very ethnographic customer insight work. So I came in and I said, I don't know what the idea is yet, but it's going to have to be something notable. So I went out and I was meeting with small businesses, and I was, you know, sitting there at their counter while they were talking about what was hard about running their business or what was challenging about it. And but I would look around their shoulder and I would see their kids in the back helping wash dishes. And I was thinking, think about what that second generation is learning about entrepreneurship and creating your own destiny. Or I'd meet with someone who had left a big corporate, you know, the reliability of a corporate role to start her own retail shop. And she would talk about the challenges, but I would think, I would see the inspiration. And so for me, it just started to come to life that, you know, there are stories to be shared here, because as soon as I met with any of them, I wanted to bring back all my friends to eat at that restaurant, everyone to do the retail shopping there. Because when you hear a business owner's story, you're literally personifying a business and a purchase, and you're putting a face to a story. I'm also very passionate about this concept that brands can do well by doing good, that they don't have to be so mutually exclusive, like either you're making money or giving away money. And so I was kind of rooted in this, you know, how can we do something, doing well for us would be raising our awareness and reaching more small businesses, but how can we do something good on our way to achieving those business results? And good for the small business community is getting more business and more people understanding the importance of supporting them and that you have power in your dollar. So that's when the idea of the Small Business Revolution first kind of came. It was, there are really unique stories out there that we could use as inspiration to, you know, drive this message of how important it is to support your small businesses. And the best way to do that would be by telling these stories and sharing these stories and celebrating the businesses, all with a really cinematic lens where the brand came along for the ride, but it wasn't Deluxe's Small Business Revolution. It was movement first. Like, how can we create a movement and then it'll be championed by Deluxe, not the other way around? And I think that that kind of thought process, we even had its own website, it had its own look and feel, smallbusinessrevolution.org. The .org was a very purposeful decision. So even in that first year, it was all about leading with the stories, leading with authenticity, and making, it was a bet that the brand would come along. I mean, you can guess I got a lot of questions about, well, how will we get credit for this and where will our brand show up? But those were some of the initial discussions, is like, unless we do something really different, the sea of sameness is over here. Unless we stand way over here and be seen as advocates for small businesses, we're just going to get lost in this noise.
Well, and it's, I mean, it's an important point that you raise around, you know, you led with authentic storytelling and the brand came along. I know that that's often brought up as sort of a conflict point, you know, even in sponsored content when a brand is sort of doing an adjacency. How did you think about the balance between those two things? You know, how did you sort of sell through this idea of like, hey, it's not gonna be an infomercial, right? It's really going to be story first. And what do you think you learned in that process of selling that through that you would sort of guide others on their journey around this sort of content?
Yeah, at the very beginning, you have to kind of have company-wide buy-in, and you have to be very clear that it's a long-term strategy, that doing something that is a unique content platform or thinking of yourself as a publisher isn't just something you do for one cycle, sales cycle, or one marketing calendar plan. It's kind of thinking about it in stages and understanding that you're signing up for kind of a little bit of a longer haul to see it pay off. So at the very beginning, what I said is our first stage of this will be just about making sure, especially with this low of brand awareness, that people associate the name Deluxe with small business. That's our goal for this first iteration. And then once we see our scores at a certain point, once we feel like we have the reach that we feel is necessary, then we can round the corner to making sure that people understand Deluxe and small business marketing services. Like, then we can take a little bit of a step. But I outlined that at the very beginning. Like, these are the stages, these are the milestones, these are the levers will pull, but here are the leading indicators that we can now round that corner. So I kind of almost baked in, like, our brand will show up when it's ready to show up because we've reached, you know, certain, again, thresholds. So that helped just to kind of, you know, we're all making the decision against that criteria versus each year making a decision about it. But the second piece was just really around, I mean, they were long board discussions. I was basically in and saying, remember how we love to measure everything and, you know exactly how much of a return we're going to get if we spend this amount of dollars on this, you know, paid piece. Instead, let's invest really beautiful storytelling. I won't be able to measure it for you in the same way. I mean, it was a bit of a, but I just made passionate speeches about, like, I just gave them the numbers. Like, look at this competitive marketplace. Everyone is competing for the same eyeballs. We could create something that small businesses choose to spend time with, and we get the brand impression, but only if we do it right. It has to be something that they authentically want to spend time with. And that's certainly true of the series now, but even in that first year in that storytelling, the brand had to play kind of second fiddle to it. And we were just betting that as people wrote stories about it, as people shared in social media, that the brand could come along for the ride. But it was, that was what we were signing up for, was really understanding that it was a kind of like a, you had to round a corner around it.
Yeah, well, and setting it up in the right way. But you also talk about, you know, it was sort of a step of necessity as well, where you couldn't compete just purely on media dollars. So, you know, you thought rather than just throwing it all in on amplification, you actually created content. How much of your unique background do you think made it possible for you to dive in to actually craft content? And how much of it was, you know, sort of you sort of sitting as the chief brand officer thinking that it was the right thing to do? It's kind of a tough one because I know you can never really separate yourself, but like you have been a content creator, you have, you know, done a lot of really creative things in your background. Was that what gave you the confidence to do it? Or do you think a lot of marketers, maybe without that unique background, could also be making the leap?
I think both. And this is a very insightful question. Thank you for asking it. I mean, I think I've always lived in pursuit of trying to figure out how to do good in the world and from whatever seat. And I remember I was in high school and I knew I wanted to do good in the world. But I thought of it as a much more traditional approach. Like I'm going to need to join the Peace Corps or become a teacher. Something that on paper looks very good, run a nonprofit. But I was so attracted to production and design and film and advertising and marketing. And I remember I shared that with a high school teacher that I was just conflicted by those two things, that marketing at first blush doesn't have kind of that altruistic feel that some of these more traditional roles did. And I remember he said, without even missing a beat, he's like, but Amanda, if people who want to do good in the world don't go into the business world, how will the business world or marketing ever make a difference or get better? And for me, that was just a huge paradigm shift. Like, oh, no, we all need to be advocating for good from whatever role we have. And if I have a skill set and desire and passion for marketing advertising, can't I actually use that seat to advance for good in a way that works alongside all these more traditional roles that are doing good? So I say that because I think throughout my entire career, I've been trying to pursue this intersection of showing the efficacy of marketing and the principles and connecting with consumers and the basic principles of what our field is with, like, how do you do, you know, goodness through it. At the same time, I started out my career on the ad agency side. So one of my first projects was working on the BMW films at Fallon. And I think that just, you know, that ruined me for content moving forward, ruined by, like, it set this incredible,
so beautiful project. And well shot. Yeah.
And even 20 years later, we just had a little celebration of the 20-year anniversary not too long ago, and or a few weeks ago. And it's like, still no one has really delivered that thing. Here, the roadmap was there. I mean, we feel like the Small Business Revolution is in that camp, but it's not what the BMW films was. It was just incredible. So I think that kind of just set my expectations that brands can do that kind of work. I just didn't know any different starting out my career. But I think for all of us, when we look back at our past jobs and our past roles, each one was helping create some part of our pedigree that would lead us to what we're doing today or what we might even do in the future. And so I think there are some roles I've had in the past where I can directly, like the BMW films, for example, or some of the work I did at United Health Group, where I can either point to goodness or high quality production. But there are some roles in between there that it was what I was accomplishing that made me even at the table to consider being the chief brand officer at Deluxe. Like, so they're all in service to, like, where you are and what you arrive to. And it's always easier to see it looking back at your career than forward. But so I think it's a combination of both. I think I've been inspired by incredible production throughout my career. I think I've always been living in pursuit of this. How do you bring business results and doing something that matters and it's good? How do those two things happen to how can they coexist? But I think SBR within my career is the most poignant example of that. But all of these steps in my career had to happen for me to kind of be in this role.
Oh, I love it. I was actually, when I was preparing to chat with you today, I was researching, like, has there been another series that has been so like originated from the brand side? And I can't come up with great examples, at least not to this scale at all. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's really sort of, you know, the first of its kind. And I think something that, you know, will serve as a huge inspiration for brands to think about, you know, it isn't just about making one video or, you know, one sort of short thing. It can really have a life of its own and sort of take things to such a different level.
Well, and if we can do it like as a conservative, like $2 billion, like known for check printing company with very little budget. Imagine what somebody's
over 100 years old, right? Like no one would have looked to you for that kind of innovation.
Yeah. And so it's like, if we can do it at our size with the investment, with the lack of investment we had, again, I think big brands could be doing seismic things. And there's so much goodness that needs to be done in the world. We're not all meant as brands or as companies to be solving the same problems for our customers, but every customer, there can be things that companies can be doing beyond just selling them things or products or services. You can be participating in your customers' lives in the way that matters to them and makes their lives better. And if every brand could find that and then invest in amplifying that message, I mean, just imagine how different the world could be. I mean, as brands, we're standing behind giant megaphones. We are putting the, you know, over $500 billion annually is spent on talking about ourselves as brand. A portion of that, or just brought in some of that messaging within that $500 billion, we could start to advocate for real change around things that matter. And I think as brands, it's like our responsibility. Like that's too big of a megaphone not to be using it for something other than making money.
Well, and I think, you know, what's important and timely about what you're saying there is I think the consumer has always thought of it and appreciated it from brands, but I feel like particularly with, you know, 2020 and the sort of collective mindfulness that I feel came to the forefront in a way that we've never really seen in recent history. I feel like more than ever, the consumer is receptive of it, and a really good swathe of the population kind of demands it. You know, if they don't see what a brand stands for, and if a brand isn't willing to make that transparent, I think it's actually going to hurt. You know, I feel like for so long it was like beholden on brands to be middle of the road. Don't express your opinion on these things. Don't offend anyone. And now it's almost like the challenge of, you know, who are you willing to maybe slightly alienate in service of sharing what you really stand for and what you believe.
I think you're right. And I think there's a lot of things that used to be termed as political that we're now seeing are not political, they're human rights. And so it has actually shifted. You're right. Within the last year and a half, we have seen it where it has gone from like the brand safe thing to do is to not take a side to like, if you're not saying something, you're saying something. So, right.
And you're not brand safe. Yeah.
Right. People are making an impression of where your brand stands on it, whether you're saying something or not. And so, yeah, the heart and soul of companies is on the sleeve. And, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Like that's when the silver linings that came out of this past incredibly difficult year and a half is that, consumers are just holding brands more accountable, and in my opinion, as they should.
As they should, yeah. But I think we'd never really just taken a pause to think about it. You know, it's I noticed, you know, I was looking at Deluxe's social media as I was prepping to chat with you too, and I also noticed that one of your top performing pieces of creative was, you know, a post sort of around June around Black Lives Matter and the importance there. I mean, how have you kind of adjusted or thought about, you know, your role and your company's role in society? You know, you're already doing a lot of work for small businesses, but have there been any adjustments for you, you know, given 2020 and some of what, you know, we went through as a culture?
Absolutely. So season 6 of the Small Business Revolution is actually, we're bringing it back home to Minneapolis and St. Paul, and we'll be featuring all Black-owned businesses and entrepreneurs. Typically in past seasons, for those who aren't familiar with the Small Business Revolution, each season, we revitalize a different community's main street through its small businesses. So typically each season takes place in a different small town. We've had 5 of those kinds of seasons. And for us, it just felt like, I mean, Minneapolis was ground zero in many ways for the social reckoning that we're seeing the world go through right now around racial injustice. And so we felt a responsibility to bring back this program, because there are so many ways forward around addressing racial injustice, and economic empowerment is one of them. you know, how are we building up entrepreneurs? How are we making sure that small businesses are successful? The very thesis of our show is that if you have strong small businesses, the ripple effect within communities is seismic. And so we, you know, as all brands and individuals, we're trying to figure out, how do you be a part of the solution? How do you play some sort of role that's appropriate to your reach and your ability to impact some of these systemic barriers? For us, it just felt so natural and authentic. This is what we've been doing for years, is building up entrepreneurs, showing what a difference that makes within neighborhoods and communities. So let's turn our lens to Minneapolis and St. Paul. Let's feature all Black-owned businesses. And for us then, as a brand, it's a very authentic place to play. We're not suddenly, I think, I feel like there's been a lot of like kind of hashtag activism over the last year, and everyone's kind of wanting to say something and be a part of it. And that's, anything that's moving us forward is great, but I do feel like the more authentic it can be and the more natural it is to what your brand can actually make in terms of a difference, I think just the more that will resonate.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll pick up on something that you just said, which I agree, anything that moves things forward is positive, but I think so many brands have rushed to join in on some of these conversations, but they weren't really ready to back it up. And like we've seen, you know, particularly on platforms like social media, you come out, you know, in support of AAPI or Black Lives Matter or others, you get, you know, maybe some backlash in comments, and figuring out how to stand behind that and how to be consistent, as opposed to just, you know, doing the sort of brand Bible thing of just don't engage, just go dark, don't say anything. I mean, that in and of itself, I don't know that it makes it worse necessarily, but it certainly doesn't make it better. And it isn't authentic. And I think people smell that a mile off, at least today.
Absolutely. And I feel like within the marketing space, there is so much talk about brand purpose. And I just get so tired of it, because it's like, unless you're actually doing something with it, purpose is just like a super fancy marketing term for a mission statement. Like, brand purpose is great, but only if you're actually then taking brand action with it. And so for us, we need to, as a company, make sure that we're being vocal about what we stand for, but then we actually need to demonstrate it too. Put your money where your mouth is. What are you actually doing to solve that problem? And what I'm always talking about is not necessarily your employee volunteerism or where you're philanthropically supporting things. As big companies, we should be doing those things. This is about, like, could we all think about what we've done with SBR? Take a portion of your marketing dollars, figure out what you stand for as a company. Again, how you can make your customers' lives better beyond what you sell them, and then do that. Like, what I'm trying to prove through what we've done with SBR as a case study is that you'll actually reach more people. Like, for us with Small Business Revolution, we have reached 12 times more people each year. One year was as much as 14 times more people than we would have reached if we would have invested the same amount of money we invested in making the show or in the films in paid advertising. And it's all because it's authentic. It's story first. It's about the people, not about the brand. And because it was that way, I mean, here small businesses are spending 30 minutes at a time each episode hearing about Deluxe, learning about Deluxe, but because of the authentic role we play within the show, because of the fact that it's quality entertainment first, we get to be able to claim that. But anyway, so that's what I mean by brand as publisher. It's like, here we're not competing for these same eyeballs and the same pre-roll or the same ad spots during Shark Tank. Here we're creating our own Shark Tank, and people are wanting to spend time with it, specifically entrepreneurs.
Well, and the incredible part of it too, and when you're talking about sort of like 12 times as much as if you'd spent sort of through regular, do you also count like the contributions that you're making to the businesses and all of that on the shows, like where you're offering them services and things, like that's all wrapped into that? And I mean, you're actually helping them, like they're actually able to do things that they couldn't do before. And hopefully, you know, viewers who are watching it are also learning how to do that as well. And it's incredibly powerful, the cascading effect for it.
Thank you. Well, and again, for those who might not be familiar with the Small Business Revolution, so each episode is about an individual small business. So let's say we're helping a wedding dress shop in Wabash, Indiana. We first start with the beautiful story of Lisa and why she started a bridal shop, how brave it was, what's challenging. Like, you hear her story and we lead with that. But small businesses need help with so much. So many people started, Lisa in particular started it because she just has always wanted to go into the wedding dress shop. But that doesn't necessarily mean that she knew all the aspects of running a business. So we walk alongside these business owners, and each episode is basically a small business makeover, but done with heart. We're there to honor them. Nobody's making each other sound stupid, or we're not making up drama. But the two things that most small businesses struggle with are marketing, not necessarily understanding how to use marketing to grow their business, and then their finances and not understanding their numbers or what the numbers are telling them. So in each episode, we help them with those things. So for us, Deluxe gets to show what a difference our websites make and our packaging and our promo and apparel and our business cards. But again, you couldn't be doing a makeover for small business and not help them with those things. And so that was all in the conceptual creation of the show, very purposeful that we could play a natural character in the episode. So when I say that people are spending 30 minutes learning about Deluxe, that's what I mean, is that they're not just hearing about the fact that we do a website, they're seeing what a difference the website makes to Lisa and her growing her business, and then what that means to her community because she is more viable. Anyway, you get it. But
yeah, no, I mean, it's, and, you know, I think we've talked a lot about, you know, the digital footprint. What do you see as the role of social media, whether you answer that like for small businesses or maybe, you know, within the context of sort of Deluxe Corporation as a whole?
I think small businesses sometimes are very scared of social media, and they feel like, I just don't have time to be posting. I don't have time to be creating it. So we're always working with them on, you know, kind of creative ways to have content calendars and think through your content in different ways. But, you know, it's the new word of mouth, whether it's for large businesses or small businesses. And I think it's about making sure that you are offering value to your customers. And each company and each business has a way to do that that's different. So whether it's an inspirational quote or whether it's new information or whether it's a funny video, like it's all about, like, people go to social media to escape normal life. So they don't need more deals and percentages off through your social media. They need to understand what your brand stands for. They want to spend something that either makes them laugh or cry or inspired or educated. That's what I always say about this moment's revolution, is like one part inspiration, one part affirmation, one part education, and then hopefully one part education. Like, we try to achieve that through the structure, that just the way the show's done. And if you can do all those things to your customers at once, now you're delighting them. But just focusing on at least one of those things, I think, is really important. And so many brands, I think, feel very sterile. And while they might have great followers, it's really more about looking at your engagement rates. Like, just to have a lot of followers, you can buy those, it can come over time. People sign up for different reasons. But if you look at, are you starting conversations? Are there, I think the engagement in social media speaks more volumes than your total followers.
Yeah. And I think raising a metric like engagement rate is really important, because sometimes you won't have lots of followers. So if you just look at your totals, it's sort of not a fair fight, you know, but if you think about it relative to your fan follower base. But I will pull out that amazing, the world doesn't need your coupons in their social feed. No, but it ties, I think, a lot into where we started this conversation, which is, you know, how do you place story at the heart of how you communicate? And that should work in social media as much as it works, you know, in digital or anything else. But I think all too frequently, you know, we forget, and we just sort of make it another channel to pipe your advertising message on, you know, which, you know, then you become the clutter that people are trying to avoid.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's exactly it. But well said. The goal for brand should be, how do I create something that people actively want to spend time with? Not how do I keep investing in things that interrupt what people want to be spending time with? So like pre-roll is one of the most annoying. I mean, I it's effective. I get why people invest in it. I understand why advertisers buy it, but anyway, I shouldn't have picked on a specific media, but yeah.
Pre-roll is annoying. I think that's fair to say. I don't think anyone will dispute that.
So it's like, how are you contributing in a way, you know, that isn't interrupting, but it's actually something that they are seeking. I mean, that should be the goal for all brands.
Well, and it requires, you know, it sounds obvious when you say it like that, but I think it does require almost a fundamental rewiring of our advertising and marketing brain, right? Because if you think about television, it was the ads are the things that you have to sit through in order to get to the thing that you want, which is the show, right? So it was always this sort of exchange of like, how much can you tolerate in order to get this thing that you want? And I think breaking us of that pattern of going, hey, it is possible to meld those two things. One doesn't have to be a punishment, right? It doesn't have to be something that you put up with because you know you have to. Obviously, there's some terrific ads that become content in themselves, but it's rare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and it's even just thinking through the creative sometimes. Like if pre-roll is the only way you think you can engage, can you try and buy against that platform and add some other behind the scenes to whatever content it is people are trying to watch, or something that the creative is more adjusted versus just using it as another pipe for this ad that you created for TV, thinking through how people are consuming it. I think we just all need to think more about kind of that customer experience, and that many times the medium is part of the message. So how do you make sure that you're creating, again, content that is of people's, it's worth people's time to spend time with.
And you talked a little about setting expectations when you were sort of embarking on this, you know, content creation journey, but how did you manage the role or think about the role of data and insights as you were sort of building, you know, what it was that you were building up? And I know you had to sway everyone from thinking of it as direct response, but like, how did insights feed into your process?
Yeah, we looked a lot at, you know, I was learning it from a qualitative perspective and kind of spending time boots on the ground meeting with small businesses. But the data showed us too that small businesses want to learn from other small businesses. They want to spend time even in their entertainment space with something that helps them grow their business. I mean, that is the entrepreneurial mindset. You're never not at work. You're never always thinking. They want to be affirmed. I mean, it's very lonely to be a small business owner. For those of us who work for larger companies, we feel like we're real busy and it's a lot of stress, but not the entire success of the company doesn't rely on our shoulders. But when you're a small business owner, it does. And you can sometimes wonder if you're the only one struggling with a certain challenge or not. So we heard from small business owners that they really wanted to hear that other people were struggling with the same thing and then hear the solution, but just to kind of almost alleviate their concerns that they were alone. There were a lot of just kind of different data insights. We looked at where they were spending time on their own, and we saw that they were consuming your Shark Tanks and your profits and things like that. And even though the work evolved into a TV show or a series, again, that wasn't the first year's intention. It was really just about sharing stories and celebrating small businesses. And so to be seen as a brand that's spending its time, dollars, expertise, in our own 100th anniversary, not talking about ourselves, but talking about the customers we love to serve, that in and of itself made, you know, small businesses, it helped small businesses feel seen and heard by the brand versus talked to or at by the brand.
Yeah, it almost, I was just thinking of something as you were speaking around, I think there's some, well-known marketing advice, which is like make your customer the hero. But I think this is a great example of, you know, it's your 100th anniversary. You could have talked about how great that was and, you know, chronicled every single year and all your milestones, but instead you chose to really shine a light on 100 small businesses, you know, and look at it that way. Love it. So as you think across your career, what do you think has been the most influential decision for you?
Ooh, I think deciding to go to the client side. So I was raised in the ad agency environment, as I noted earlier. I loved my time I was at McCann Minneapolis, I was at Fallon, I was at Conan Wolf in London for a while. I love the agency environment and I miss it and crave it regularly. And just that kind of being surrounded by smart, strategic, creative, interesting people all the time is something that's unique to the ad and media agency world. And so I loved that, but I was always kind of tempted by what the impact could be when you actually controlled the dollars and you controlled the strategy. I mean, I think sometimes it's a disservice that agencies only get called when there's a brief and they see this little slice of the consumer problem we're trying to solve. Whereas I was very attracted to go to the client side so I could see, you know, to take those blinders off and see we have a customer experience problem as it relates to our call centers. Well, when you're on the client side, you can walk down the hall and talk to the person who runs the call centers and you know, fix that script. Whereas when you're on the agency side, sometimes it takes too long to get that message all the way through. So I think the most influential thing was being able to go, making that decision to go to the corporate side, kind of having the stomach for navigating corporate culture and just what that was going to mean. And so I'm glad that I made the decision. It's been an active exercise though, in continuing to maintain that creativity and not let that, I mean, corporate environments and just culture, it can be tough, and good ideas go to the wayside for very silly reasons. And so I think it was just, I wanted to prove to myself that I could maintain that creativity, even if I went to the client or corporate side. And I think examples like the Small Business Revolution are a perfect example of that wouldn't have happened if I wouldn't have been on the client side and wouldn't have seen the big picture of what we were trying to solve. Yet it's taken external partners to bring it to life. But anyway, so I feel like I've enjoyed being kind of an entrepreneur, being able to prove that you can bring creativity to the corporate world and kind of create that creativity from the inside out. And that the way that can contribute to the overall brand experience might be more impactful than just one campaign at a time.
Well, and I think you might have proved it with one season. So at season six, you're like really proving that to yourself, right? So.
Like we had to have five seasons under our belt of it being like, it's like the number one lifestyle show on Hulu. Like it's doing really well, but we needed all of those years in order for like the decision around season six and the platform that it has become to be truly helpful in this overall solution around racial injustice. So like it had, the platform had to be at a point, we couldn't have just had that idea year one, and we could have, but it just had the same kind of impact. And so I'm just a huge believer that everything kind of happens for a reason, but you need to be leaning into stuff too. Like it's kind of a, you're working in partnership with the universe on some of that stuff, I think.
Yeah, I love that. If you could go back in time and offer yourself one piece of advice early in your career, what would that piece of advice be?
To not feel so guilty about traveling. So we have a young daughter, she's 10 now, but I have traveled quite a bit specifically for the show, as you can imagine, being in a different town every year. And there's a whole part of the process where we travel around the country finding these businesses and like that every year. So I think I just felt, you know, some guilt around being gone. And now I look at the pride my daughter has in the fact that while I'm technically a C-suite executive at a successful company, when she writes, like, you know, the Mother's Day, what does your mom do? She writes, my mom helps communities. Like what a beautiful, like to see it through your children's eyes. Like, I think sometimes we only see it as like, especially as women, I think we carry it heavier, is my opinion, where we feel like this guilt to be good at everything and achieve some sort of balance, which doesn't exist. But maybe in lack of balance, we're teaching our kids incredible things. Like my daughter will never not see women as like sitting at the boardroom table, running the show, being the boss. And so I've created, that's a great impression to have created for her too. So anyway, I just wish I wanted to beat myself up so much at the very beginning, because if I could have seen what it was teaching her, I probably would have just saved some personal heartache around being gone.
Some internal stress. As you look out into the future, what are you most excited about? Whether it's your next mountain to climb or just, you know, as you stare down 2021 and 22.
Yeah. When I think about it, I want to go prove this is possible at other brands. And so I think what I'm excited about is being able to kind of inspire other brands to try and follow suit. I don't always have to be at each of the companies. The more companies are thinking about it this way, the better. But I think what I'm always trying to figure out is how to scale that. Like, you know, do I go to another company and do something like this at a larger scale, or do I help multiple companies at once so more goodness can be done? I don't know. So for me, whenever that is, I'm just excited to prove the two things that I think SBR has proven, which is one, you as a company, you can do well by doing good. You can do something that's good for your business, but makes a difference in the lives of your customers. And that authenticity at its core is a way to achieve that. And then the second, which is around what we started this conversation with, which is that brands can be publishers. They can create something that people actively want to spend time with. And to me, I think those two things are the future of connecting with customers. I won't even use the word marketing. I think that's the future of engaging with your audience. And I think if marketing can take the lead on those things, then all the better for our industry. So that's what I'm excited about, is just trying to figure out how to like keep doing this and help more brands do it too.
Oh, that's incredible. Well, listen, it's so wonderful to chat with you, Amanda. Thank you so much for bringing your perspective. And, you know, I can't wait to hear more about what's next as well.
Thank you for having me. It's been a fun discussion.